This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the heart of Manhattan, Rockefeller Center, New York City, Newsstand Studios. Joined as usual with John behind me. How you doing, John?
Doing great, thanks.
Everything good? Got Joe Hazen rocking the panels. What's up?
Hey, great to see everyone here.
Yeah. And we got a full house over there in the upper left. We got Quinn. How you doing, Quinn? Feeling better?
Yeah, I'm good.
Awesome. Down there in the Los Angeles area, we got Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
I'm good.
Good. And Jackie Molecules, right?
Yo, I'm here.
Love it. And today's special guest, actually first time ever on the show, although I have been to your new restaurant, so we could talk about it, is Chef Mads Restland, now of Illis, but formerly of Acme and Noma. Call in your questions to 917-410-1507. That's 917-410-1507. If you are a member of the Patreon, you can do that. And John, why don't you tell them what they get?
You get access to through the different levels of membership, we got access to things like our Discord, discounts with some of the great people we work with, like Matt at Kitchen Arts and Letters and the rest of the team there. Edwards Age Meats, you know, we've worked with in the past, Glassvin, you know, just a bunch of great things. Patreon.com/cooking issues.
And Quinn, were you able to get Kitchen Arts and Letters to give the Patreon discount on Chef's book or no?
Yes, that went up yesterday.
Nice. So if you're a member of the Patreon, you can log on to Kitchen Arts and Letters and pick up Chef Restland's book, Scraps, Wilt, and Weeds, which we can talk about later. Actually, that's very early in the cookbooks on using things that might otherwise get thrown away. We'll talk about it later. You were taking a very huge interest in that. You wrote the book in 2017, which means you were thinking about it probably for 5 years before that.
Yeah, very early.
Yeah. And actually, so now's the portion of the show where we talk about anything interesting that's happened, usually culinarily, not always. Sometimes it could be a concert, right, Stas? Could be anything, but, you know, try to keep it cooking related over the past week. Anyone got anything?
I got things.
All right, what do you got?
Oh, boy, I've been a busy little bee, so I finished curing my, a cured goose breast that I applied my guanciale recipe to, and so I made a porkless carbonara for one of my caregivers that doesn't eat pork.
All right, well, that's nice. Now let me ask you this. What is the difference in the end result, once it's cured, between goose, which is usually in the U.S. not so, well, you're not in the U.S., you're in Canada, but usually not so great, versus duck, which is easier to get? Like, were you like, oh, now I know what goose tastes like when it's cured into like a, well, goose prosciutto style thing, goose breast versus duck? Any actual gooseness to it?
I don't know if I haven't had a cured duck recently. I thought it would be fattier, but it actually wasn't. So I think next time I will go for either duck or goose leg, actually. I think that will be a better fat to lean.
That's probably going to be tough as all get out, though. It's going to be like the toughest thing you've had to cure.
Yeah, but once you cure it and age it, I think that'd be okay. Like, pork cheek is tough.
I don't know, man. Maybe. I don't know. You know, things, it depends on how long you cure it. Things break down. Protein breaks down.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah. So, Chef, you know, your Scandinavian folks, they love goose. I'm sure your goose is better than our goose, though, right?
I don't think they're better, but maybe they're better fed and had a better life in somehow. But I think goose here are pretty good as well.
Yeah? Don't ever get them. They're so...
Yeah, they're difficult to find, but when you get them, it's good.
Do the Danes do that, like, Christmas goose blood soup thing that the Swedes do?
It's not a traditional, no. Not so much. We do the sausages, but no.
Yeah.
It's more pork. It's focused about pork and duck.
Well, Kevin Jung from Noma Projects gave me a couple of weeks ago one of the scorers so I can do the Danish style score.
Oh, yeah,
skin.
Score the skin, yeah. Yeah.
What's the name of that thing, that tool?
I don't know what you call it. We use it for eel right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you use for your eel?
Yeah.
For the corn cob eel?
Yeah. So we basically just score the eel skin so it gets crispy.
So whose job is it to sharpen that thing?
you don't sharpen it at all.
Ever? It's just like...
No, you have to get a new one. It's almost like a razor, one-time razor.
Just razor.
It is razor blades. Basically, it's razor blades.
Oh, I keep it in the box in my house because I don't want someone just going into the drawer and being like, "What's this?" Because it looks like it's not going to be so harmful.
Yeah, yeah, you can cut yourself. Very
Yeah. I imagine. What about you guys, California folks? Anything? You guys got anything this week?
I'm going to New Orleans tomorrow, so if anybody in Discord has anything exciting and new there.
Well, what's new? I mean, New Orleans, not really about the new, right?
I guess that's true. I mean, I've done, like, most of the classic stuff, so I don't know. Maybe off the beaten path, then, not new.
Like what? Like, what stuff? What's the so you've done, like, the Willie Mays, the Dookie Chase, that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what's the name of that sandwich place that got a beard award? I went there last time. You need to see whether Turgay is doing anything, the specialty Turkish coffee. The best Turkish coffee, like a world champion barista, Turgay, is down there in New Orleans, and I want everyone to have Turkish coffee the way he makes it. But he's never going to open a shop. He has a place, and he roasts his own stuff, and he does specialty Turkish coffee. And I have to say, I love it. I think it's great. I'm not good at it, but, you know, maybe check that out.
There you go. That's a good tip.
Yeah. All right, what about you, Stas? Yeah.
No real cooking stuff.
Yeah. Well, okay, this is not cooking. Yeah. This is not cooking, but here's what I did. I've always wanted to do this, and I have a lot of stuff that I'm behind on. So instead of doing that, I was like, hey, remember when I made the jigger and we were considering making a jigger for Booker and Dax? And we were like, no, we're never going to make any money making a jigger. Never going to make any money, not even one dime. Yeah. So there's no point. If you're not going to make anything at all, if you're going to lose money doing something, maybe don't. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I realized that my program to write it is completely parametric. So I can just write whatever I want. So I made a jigger that is scaled such that a whole 750 of liquor is the 2 ounce portion of the jigger. So it's like I can make like 12.5 it's a 12.5 drink jigger that just works like a regular jigger, but it's 12.5 drinks. And then a mini one that goes with it that is for bar spoons and dashes, but in units of 12.5. So you can like mix with whole bottles. So that's all I got. What about you, John? Anything?
I've just been dealing with, I was telling everyone before you showed up,
that's a dig on me being late. Love it. Anyway, go ahead.
No, that wasn't a dig.
Yeah, sure.
No, I've got an upstairs neighbor who's been complaining about the noise, even though we've been doing the same thing for 3 years, and it's getting incredibly frustrating.
At the restaurant?
Yeah.
When did they move in?
I don't know. I would think recently, but it's like, what do you expect living right above a restaurant in the West Village in a 100-year-old building?
I hate people so much.
They honestly call to ask us to turn the music off during service.
You're like, no.
No. Yeah.
Here's something. No.
Yep.
And as a corollary to that, no.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've been to your restaurant. It's not like...
No, it's not.
You know what I mean? It's not... You're not like...
Yeah.
It's not one of those kind of places.
It's not.
Maybe... see.
What kind of music are you playing?
Leave it up to the front of house staff to decide, but usually, I don't know, like... Whatever radio station's on Spotify, but nothing like super intense.
It's a wine bar.
Yeah.
It's a place that you can speak to people when you're there.
Yeah.
You know? You know who I'm talking about where I can't talk when I'm at your places. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's not crazy. People are whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I want to live in the village where everything's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just don't want it happening in my building.
Exactly.
You know, and they're like, we're getting such a good deal on this second floor apartment. Idiot.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, God. You know, it's
100%.
Like.
Dave, are you going to Primus?
When is it? I don't know
Saturday.
When it is. This Saturday? Probably not. I'd like to. I'll look at it. I got to see what I'm doing. Stasi, I am falling apart. I got so much to do. Anyway, all right, hold on. Chef, you doing anything new at the restaurant? Anything interesting this week that's new?
We just got 200 pounds of white asparagus from California.
Oh, Jesus.
We have to peel that.
How big are they?
They're pretty good, but it's a second hand. It's like the second sort, so it's not. It's the ugly ones we took.
Oh, I know you like the ugly.
Yeah, I like to find beauty in the ugly things, the things we normally throw out.
Now, so. When they shipped that from California, because I've never really actually bought it from a supplier like that. I just buy it like a jerk in the store. But like, do they wrap something wet around the base?
No, we're getting it in a loose box. I don't like when things are wrapped in things, and I just like when it's loose.
But does it stay moist enough? It doesn't dry out of the tip?
Yeah, it ships overnight, so.
Oh, okay, okay. So it's not like getting all... Don't you hate it when you see them and the bottom is like...
Yeah.
And then they wrinkle?
I hate
they...
when we go to the farmer's market and you get these radish or herbs and they have like elastic around it and you... It gets smooshed together and it's kind of destroyed when you get it to the restaurant. So I always try to, when I go to the market, I always take the elastic off or the metal band around. I take it off and everyone gets mad at me. But
I like to pre-bruise mine and then use the back of my knife to cut it. Just kidding.
We also had, last couple of weeks, we had magnolia. Was it 100 pounds? No, 80 pounds of magnolia we are salting and curing.
The flowers,
yeah, magnolia. Huh.
So many different kinds of magnolia. Do you have like a forager who's getting like the one that has the right smell?
We have a forager, yeah. We have a couple. But we have Tama, who I wrote the book with. She's bringing most of our things to the restaurant. And then a lot of our team members like to go out and forage themselves as well.
Yeah, what's your favorite New York City foraging thing? I know mine, but... You don't want to blow up your... I'm going to say it's blow up your spot.
But the spot, I don't have... There's not such a thing as a wild spot in New York. Everything is private owned, so you have to have permits from someone.
Well, we don't feel bad... Like, you don't steal from city trees? I steal from city trees all the time.
Yeah, we don't.
Really?
But,
linden blossoms, shad berries,
cherry
sumac.
Blossom, yeah, sumac always.
Yeah.
You can do that, but for a restaurant, I think it's too risky.
Yeah.
I think it's private... No, we don't have to say anything, but private is a different story.
It also costs a lot because we used to pay people on our staff to go, and then you're paying.
There's people going to the central, the big park, and take things from that central park, but it's not really legal.
Yeah,
you have to be careful what you do.
People have yelled at me once. I was in Riverside Park, which is like way upper west, and they have a lot of berry trees up there, like a lot of like different mulberry hybrids and a lot of, shad bush, Juneberry stuff. And I'm picking mulberries, because how every tree, when this tree sucks, that tree's good, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So I'm like picking a bunch of mulberries. I find a tree I like. The guy's like, you can't do that. I'm like, yes, I can. Absolutely, I can. And he's like, what? I'm like, show me where I can't do this.
Yeah.
And he's like... because I don't feel bad about it, so I guess that's the thing. I'm not gonna feel.
It's falling
bad.
To the ground anyway and rotten, so it's like you should take it. But
and nobody likes stepping on mulberries.
No one.
Do you do ginkgos? You forage ginkgo nuts here? I know where there's some good ginkgo trees.
Yeah, for sure.
You can't take from the one that you can't take from is the New York Botanical Garden because they have some sick stuff that falls on the ground.
I just was there last week. My mom was visiting from Denmark, and we went to Botanic Garden in Brooklyn. So beautiful.
Oh, it's great.
It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, both of our botanic gardens are great. I also really like the one in Copenhagen, though. You guys
Sure.
Yeah, you guys have
it. And my mom was comparing the Danish in Copenhagen, the botanic garden there, to... She was, in Denmark we have this and this and this. She said it all the time when we... But she gets very stressed about too many people.
This is a bad place to visit if you get stressed about too many people.
Oh, yeah, it was like so many tourists. It was one of these days where the sun was out.
Yeah. Oh, we're the worst. As soon as the sun comes out,
everyone's out.
It's like they melt. Like we melt out into the streets. We
get glued to the concrete. Yeah.
Yeah. Nastasia always You always used to say you hated that. You hated that New Yorkers like suddenly start doing stuff when the weather's nice. Like do stuff when the weather's not nice, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Don't be so weak. Like
you don't have to worry about that out here.
Because the weather's always quote unquote nice.
Yeah, but you don't have to deal with like the frenzy,
Well, because no one's walking anywhere.
That's not true.
Oh yeah.
But okay.
Maybe it's better. I don't know. Maybe it's better. The last couple times I went to LA, I tried to get walking directions, and they were like, "You can't." Like literally, Google was like, "No, what do you mean?" The walking directions are: you get in the car, and you drive there, hand it to the valet, and walk in the front door. Like they wouldn't even give me walking directions. You're saying it's better now? It's getting better.
I don't know.
It depends on where you are.
Walk places.
Yeah. I guess everything depends on where you are. All right. So let's talk about Illis. So this restaurant, first of all, this place is huge. It's in Greenpoint, New York, which is, for those of you that don't know, New York is like, it's the upper. So if you, it's like upper, upper across the how would you describe Greenpoint?
It's the north part of Williamsburg. Like, it's just before you go into Long Island, you know.
Yeah, so. And you know, 30 years ago when I was doing metal work for a living, mm-hmm. and my job was in Greenpoint, mm-hmm. you went there and there was nothing there. It was like, you know, Polish diners, industrial shops, little old ladies sitting on the street, like soaking up the fumes from the industrial plant next door, and you know, like
it's a new hotspot in a way in Brooklyn.
Yeah, you can't touch it. It used to be it was hard to get to because only the G train went there. But now, for the past 15 years, I'd say people who live in Greenpoint, they don't even want to leave Greenpoint. They don't need to.
It's its
own community. Yeah,
I really like it. You know, we signed the lease 3 years ago. So, and at that time, I couldn't see it. I was like, what is this place? It was like, I had been to Greenpoint one time before I signed the lease.
Really? That's kind of baller.
Yeah, it's like, but it was just, you know, I had no clue what was this neighbors was about. So
I'm not saying you smoke, but I imagine you being like, who cares where it is?
No. I went there and did some research. And of course, I didn't want to sign anything before I really knew a little bit about it. So I signed the lease when I had started the neighborhood. But I put my feet there one time or two times before I actually signed the lease. And then I moved there. And then now I'm not living there anymore, but I moved there for a year to see it. But it's impossible to find a good lease there, so.
Yeah, everything's crazy in this freaking city.
Yeah, it's very difficult with leasing and renting, yeah.
So, by the way, this is, like, for those of you that don't know the restaurant, look it up. It's not, let's say, scrappy Greenpoint. This is a giant cavernous space that used to be like a taxi, like
rubber factory. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And then but huge, like almost like a garage, like giant envelope, like big. And, you know, you had the lease for 3 years before you opened, you built out this crazy, like, how hard was the permitting for, like, because you
been
have
hard. It's
but open fire cooking.
So the whole thing started actually 8 years ago in my head. I had this crazy dream about not building a restaurant, but building a kitchen with a restaurant and a bar inside of the kitchen. So basically eating inside of the kitchen. And this space we found could allow us to do that. And it's 4,800 square feet. And basically what you do is you see everything when you come in. There's no back of house, meaning there's only front of house. So back of house or front of house becomes one house. And most restaurants in the city have a basement or have something that's hidden behind what you don't see. But basically, we are completely naked in that way.
Yes, for those of you that can't picture what's happening, so imagine you walk in and it's a kind of a giant center island kitchen. And then on the back wall, instead of in the basement, are like the walk-ins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if my memory is correct.
We have all the walk-ins are on the wall. You can see it. We open up the fridges. You can see the fridges. There's nothing that we can hide. The dishwasher, you can see it. You can see everything. The only thing you have privacy is basically the toilets. That's
yeah, yeah,
it. But the restaurant is very open. And I wanted that feeling of we could stand anywhere in the restaurant and see everyone. Because I don't want anyone to hide. So it was kind of a feeling of being transparent and just show this is what we got and this is what we want to showcase for you. So nothing is hidden in the way of when we cook. There's not, you could see everything get cooked. And it's not because we're dropping something to the floor and we pick it up and then, you know, the 5 second rule. It's not happening because
it's more of a 3 second rule. I'm kidding.
It's not happening at all. It's like we just have to be completely transparent.
Well, also you, I mean, like you make the cooks go out and do the service. Is that actually like how's that going? Because sometimes cooks don't want to talk to people.
Yeah. But basically, we didn't hire any waiters. It was just cooks. We have 35 cooks in the restaurant, and the whole idea with that is that. It's the tipping. The whole thing about tipping in New York is kind of weird for me as a foreigner. But I wanted to make sure that everyone was paid more money. And I thought, why not? If you cannot share the tip pool, You can, but it's kind of not
you're
happening.
You're going to get sued.
Yeah,
you're going to get sued.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
So we thought, okay, why not just hire everyone as cooks, and then the people who serve the food is actually the cooks. So we do like this every 3 weeks we rotate the cooks. So some is on the floor and some is in the kitchen.
I know Bobby Murphy, who was our beverage director at My Place Existing Conditions, formerly Alinea and Aviary and all this other stuff, is your bar director. But do you also then have people rotating through his stations to do the drink execution, or are they separate crew?
There's a separate crew right now, but we have people that's rotating into his station or his bar. We will have that program up and running because I feel everything is connected. And also the bar is connected to the kitchen, it's a part of the kitchen. So yeah, I think this is almost like it's a cooking school in a way. You go through the whole thing of becoming a restaurateur one day, because basically you touch every the department of a restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, when I went, I was like, I never tire of being completely wrong 100% of the time. But like, if you had asked me a couple of years ago, I thought that like the ability to kind of do a project like this was something in New York City in the past, just because New York City is such a pain to deal with permitting, money, leases, staff.
That's why it took 3 years.
Right. But I mean, like, you kind of can't believe it. There's like millions of dollars in art on the walls.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
we're lucky we had a very good neighbor. The Fausco Gallery have put all their art, some of the art they have in our space. So we're very lucky to have them.
Have you been, John, yet?
No, not yet. I need to go.
So John, aside from being a chef, is also an art historian and conservationist, right? Or a historian, or more both? They're like...
more historian, but have dabbled in conservation.
Well, for the museum, like, you get conservation. Yeah. So, like, they have like a Bozalitz like painting up there, but they're cooking with open fire in the restaurant. So it's like you're like, well, how does
that
this give even?
Me
but
major
they,
anxiety.
Yeah, but like they have this huge like kind of like cloud hood thing over mm-hmm. the center to try
okay.
to. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But
okay.
It's just like that's what I'm saying. It's like not something that you would have, like, like, whatever, like, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you go into a restaurant, they have a giant schnabel on the wall, and you're like, of course, this is New York.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Of course they do. You know what I mean? Because schnabel comes in here and he's like, I keep it on the wall and blah, 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 whatever. You know what I mean?
For me, it's not about what, of course, it's important what's on the wall, but the price doesn't really matter for me. But it could be drawings from a kindergarten, and as long as I feel it's connecting to the room, I think that's important.
Right, but it's not, though.
It's not.
Because it's also
it's
like
not.
Ai Weiwei on the other...
Yeah. He's absolutely an amazing artist. You know, he's a very big foodie also. So,
really?
Yeah, he was in an eating. He really actually want to come in and cook with us in the kitchen.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed. Like, what does he like to eat? What kind of guest is he? I love hearing stories
he
of guests.
He was, you know, came in his whole family, his whole Chinese family, and there were 12 people, and that was so cool, so sweet.
Oh, man. That's nice.
Yeah, amazing person. Really amazing person.
I like that, you know, it's his story, so next time he's on, but like, there's only one person, there's only a couple people that, my brother-in-law, Wiley Dufresne, like, one of his regulars at WD was Lou Reed, so I was like, what was Lou Reed like as a guest? You know what I mean? Like,
he's an amazing artist.
Yeah, anyway, so he apparently was the only guy that Wiley would make salad for regularly, because everyone's like, Wiley, you got to make a salad. He's like, I'm not making a salad. Now he makes salad. But like back then, you know, he was younger. So he's like, I'm no salads.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I know. We are very proud of us. Yeah.
The older you get, the less you care about that. You still care about stuff you care about.
You know, I know we cannot please everyone. It's difficult to please everyone. But a salad, if you have salad in your house, just, make it.
All right, so I went for friends and family, had a fantastic time. I haven't been back since.
Oh, so now it's completely changed.
Well, except for you still have the BDSM clam, right?
Yeah, we have a lot of, we have some things that's still on the menu, but we just refine it and make it better and better.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, this is giant... like,
surf clam.
Yeah, I mean, but it's bigger even than a quahog. It's big.
Yeah, it's big.
It's big. It's like, it makes you feel like a small child when you hold it. It's big. and it's like sealed with wax and tied like bondage style with
it's a flask. We make a flask out of it and we fill it up with a drink inside of you. You drink it.
Yeah, out of the clam, and it's I don't know, there's something sexual about it. I can't really describe why, but it's because it's tied up. You know what I mean? It's got like the wax kiss on the top.
Yeah, exactly. You have a sumac kiss on the top. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know exactly where you have to put your lips. Let's just say like that.
Yeah. But that, I mean, like I had a great time with that, but that's getting a lot of play. So now that's probably like a noose around, not a noose, but an anchor around your neck. You probably can't get rid of it now because everyone's like, and the clam.
Yeah, everyone wants that clam. That's true. But there's some things that's good to just leave for the moment. We will take it off at some point. I don't believe you have to stick to the past always. I think you always have to constantly push yourself to be better and better. So it will stay on for a little bit. Right now, we changed the season on the top of the clam, so it's like spruce tips now as a powder instead of sumac.
So I saw that you guys got your sumac locally, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Okay, I hate to say this. I've never bought sumac that I liked.
No.
Every sumac that I've ever bought, I've hated.
Yeah.
Why is it always so bad? What do they do? I know they salt it, which ruins it, or maybe they... I don't, it's just terrible. The sumac that you buy is just not good.
Yeah, I don't know what they do. They do some kind of process. I think the wild sumac is the best for sure. Everything you find wild is kind of better.
But like, I think, like, look, I like this. I like sumac. I like, you know, on, you know, the commercial stuff. You put it on French fries or whatever. It's good. It's got a little bit of acidity. But if you go get it, then all of a sudden you can use it to make teas, you can use it to make drinks. It's just so much brighter. But
have anyone give you wild sumac and you liked it, or is it just when you forged it yourself? Because there's also something about a memory and something about the process of finding it yourself.
Nastasia brought me some. And it was good. Right, okay. Stas, remember that? But to me, you're right. It brings back the memory of doing it. But yeah, that stuff you brought me was really delicious, but it just brings back memories of doing it. You know what I hate though? You know how sometimes sumac is not good? Like you have to taste the actual tree before you take it, because some of it's tasteless.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? Here we get mainly staghorn. Is that the one that you get, the furry one?
Yeah, we mainly get that.
What about in Denmark? What do they have? Is it the smoother one or the furry one?
I don't remember. I haven't been there. Sumac. I haven't foraged it for like 14 years now.
Sumac's one of my favorite. The other thing you mentioned actually in the book, which I didn't see a recipe for it, but I really like, is spicebush, Lindera benzoin.
I love spicebush. But you could use the whole thing there also. The branches.
The leaves, the branches. It's very aromatic. Like it's amazing. When you walk through the wood, you just grab some spice, crinkle it up and smell it as you walk along.
Yeah, but it's very aromatic and very strong.
Yeah, it's related to
But you have to be
laurels.
Careful with it because it can really overpower.
Yeah. You know what the other thing I found? I was going to ask you about it when I saw that you used it. Is I like it better fresh. I tried drying it once and it lost something. It got almost like a...
Fresh is the best way, but also be pickling it.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I didn't like it dried so much.
We don't dry it. We are pickling and curing it. We also smoked it. And yeah, we've done a lot of things with it.
For those of you that don't know, it's you... Search it out. If you live in the East Coast and you live in a place kind of with bad soil, a lot of water, like I used to get it. There was a lot of like hickory oak birch kind of area, low lying, a lot of sassafras and Lindera benzoin, which is the spice bush. Look for it.
It's great. Yeah. It's absolutely great.
Once you see it, you're going to see it everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like almost like knotweed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it really is.
And if my memory serves me, like the leaves, if my memory serves me that there's male and female trees, but I can't remember. So you have to look to make sure you get the ones with the berries on them. But the leaves are also good.
Mm-hmm.
And the smell,
and the branch is amazing.
Yeah.
You're making oil out of that. It's great.
Oh, you know what? We were talking, like, so Kevin from Nome was saying, so you've done it with the spice bush and it's good. Same thing, like overnight in steam with plain oil.
Mm-hmm.
And you split it or do you chum it? No, we chum it.
We almost like put it through a grounder and it's like get into powder and we put it into, not powder, but into small pieces. And then we put it into then we toast it a little bit and we put it in oil and steam it overnight.
Are you using first year shoots or any part of
young it? Young shoots is the best.
Which is good because it's a scraggly little tree. And, you know, shrub tree, and like it's got a lot of new shoots every year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good. And you're not hurting it really.
No,
you know what I mean?
No.
It's going to come back. I used to love those. I love those things. I miss that place that I used to have with all that stuff. Anyway, I had another question. I saw in a recipe that you did a thing in the book where you toasted the wood chips. I'm going to say it was apple because I don't remember. And then used that as a steep in the broth and strain out later. So how hard are you toasting that? Does it really get like a smoky note on it? Because I've obviously
it depends what wood you're using. But right now we have oak, like a aerated oak mousse on the menu. We're basically taking it off very soon. But it's a sweet dessert we're making out of oak wood. And we toast that in the oven. What is it? I don't know the scent. I always do the Scandinavian way of... So it's like 175 degrees.
It's like 350 or so?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we toast it there, and then after that, we steep it into cream, and we make this aerated mousse.
And you're using the wood or the bark or both?
Just wood. Yeah. Wood chips you're buying.
Yeah, but I noticed in the book you called out shag bark hickory, which is the bark is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, hickory is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great product. Yeah. The nuts are such a pain in the butt, though. Are you going to use that?
No, we don't use that.
They're such a pain.
It's too difficult. It's too much work.
Although, you know what they used to do locally, pre-colonial, is they would just smash, the hickory nuts and then make the hickory milk.
Yes.
And then strain out the what's
it called? Tastes delicious, but yeah. It's a lot of manpower and labor in it's what kills a restaurant business.
Yeah, I know. Hickory is God's nut though. It really is. Oh, speaking of, I was going to ask you, cuz I know you like local stuff. You're going to do shad?
Yeah, we probably would.
You got to train someone to do the magic fillet.
Yeah.
Have you seen it? Have you seen the magic fillets? Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like no one does it.
No.
They're amazing. You know what I mean? You pick up the shad and it's weird, falls apart. You got to do it.
It could be.
But like, that's super local. I don't know anyone who sells it commercially. Who sells it commercially, though? I don't know how to get it from Connecticut Fisher people.
I don't know who would do that. Maybe we are working with these guys, Dr. Dish from Montauk. Amazing. Maybe they could do it.
Or maybe they could find someone. Because that's the thing. It's like it goes in the river. Mm-hmm. That's when you get it. And it's like... It's just a good fish. It just tastes so good. You know, everyone's like, oh, the roe's good.
Mm-hmm.
You'd use it all. According to the book, you'd use the whole thing.
The roe's the best, yeah.
Yeah. But I like the meat. all right. So what am I missing? What am I not asking you about? You know what I've never had that you also mentioned in the book is, and I've said this on this air a billion times, I've never had a pawpaw. This guy behind me, John, was like, they're selling pawpaws. At the farmer's market in Brooklyn. I was like, did you buy it? He's like, no.
No.
Jerk.
Pawpaw is amazing, but it's also very time limit. It's only for two weeks.
I think I went on a Wednesday, Dave, and I wasn't going to see you until Tuesday.
I like pawpaw, but it's not my favorite fruit, but it's kind of crazy. It grows in New York. It's a mix between a mango and banana almost.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, it is a very strong perfume.
The most tropical fruit that I've ever grown on, like, area around here is mayapple.
Yeah, mayapple, okay, yeah.
But, of course, it's poisonous until it's ripe, so people get, and then animals eat the hell out of it. As soon as it gets ripe,
I think pawpaw is more, like, tropical in a way. It's not tropical because it's growing here, but it feels like it's a tropical fruit.
Yeah. Yeah, mayapple, I guess, is a little guava-y.
Yeah, maybe. It is. Yeah.
But delicious.
Yeah, I loved it.
But you can't get it. That one, I've never seen anyone... also, I noticed in your book, you refrigerate your fancy oil. That's smart. I wish I had room in my refrigerator. Refrigerates is walnut oil and whatnot.
Walnut oil, every nut oil.
Well, yeah, why don't you do that?
Because I don't have space in my fridge.
I do that, too.
At the restaurant we have this nut press. You know, we're squeezing all oils, every oil or seed oil. We're doing that every day.
The little one, the one that it also does sesame.
Yeah,
is it any good?
It's great. Invest in a good one. It's between $500 and $1,000. It's absolutely amazing.
Like how much can you do a day?
Oh, you could do a lot. Like we produce what is maybe 300 milliliters of every kind of oil every day.
Yeah, you know, because like some oils are never ever good. When you buy them.
No, but, for sure not.
Like, no offense, pumpkin seed oil people, but it's always already rancid by the time I get it. You know what I mean?
It will change your life. It's really night and day.
Yeah.
You squeeze your oils.
Now I have FOMO. Now you're giving me FOMO, chef. I hate FOMO. And you know what my wife hates more than my
there's
FOMO?
Nothing better
is
than
equipment.
Like, yeah, there's nothing better than just fresh, like, hazelnut oil. It's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you always do raw or do you pre-toast?
It depends what dish we're using it for, but right now it's toasted.
Do you know what I've never figured out, and I've asked Harold McGee? Hazelnuts are the weirdest. By the way, I don't think there's a difference between a filbert and a hazelnut. I think it's the same damn nut.
I think so too, yeah.
Yeah. But when you toast one, the inside gets darker than the outside, and I don't know why. No one can tell me why. There's something on that very, you know how the center, that little hole.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
It's weird, right? It's like you don't know you've over-toasted the hazelnut until you break it and you look at the center and you're like, I over-toasted it.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. That's weird. Though? That's weird.
Yeah. Strange stuff.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows? All right, here's one other question looking at your book. What vegetables do you think I know what I think Americans should use more, but as someone who came here and now you have to deal with New York, although you say you like New York produce, what do you think we should use more?
I wish there was better white asparagus.
It's just so expensive.
It's expensive to produce white asparagus, but now I found this grower in L.A., and it's absolutely amazing, but it's still in L.A., and it's almost the same as taking them from Denmark, but it's still in this country, so I feel it's okay. But white asparagus, for sure, that's one of my favorite vegetables.
How much do you have to peel off of the ones you get?
You take basically half of it off.
Yeah.
Because it's woody in the end, so you have to, you peel it and you take the little...
Oh, you do the old school snap. I can't bear to do it. I just keep cutting until it's not, until I know, you know, if I have throw away even a towel, I guess you're not, you're using it for something else.
No, we right now we're preserving it, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And wait, so you were, in the book you also say, you know, again, I don't deal with leeks because it's triggering, but like you fry the roots on a leek and they're good?
They're great, yeah, they're good.
Yeah. And the tops, if you cook them enough, they get soft. They don't stay stringy forever.
No, they will get completely soft.
All right. I don't cook with them because I don't know. Like I say, I love them. I love the taste of them.
The whole book was, I came to New York in 2012, and I just saw all this food waste. There was so much people throwing out. So I thought, okay, let's find a way of maybe. I feel like as a chef, you have to. You have a responsibility to teach from you. If I know something you don't know, I feel like somehow I need to get this knowledge to someone else. So we wrote this book about all these pieces that we were throwing out. It's always like what a fish got, or fish eyes, or anything on the fish. In China and all the places in the world, they don't throw things out. So why not try to teach other people how they're doing?
Now you have a bloodline recipe.
Yeah, for sure. But it was like all the roots of vegetables. Yeah, let's use that. Or the scales on the fish, let's use that. But it started also back in the day at Noma, you know, he was doing all the trash cooking also that way. So it was inspiration also that came from that time. But in Denmark, we just didn't throw things out the same way as we were throwing out in the United States.
Well, it's like a winter mentality is what you wrote in the book. It's like, got to shore up for winter. Can't throw this stuff away.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know what else I like about the book is you include testers' notes, like what the tester said about the recipe. It was like, which is kind of interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen that before. Like an input from the testers back in the recipe.
Yeah, I think, it was my first real book, so it was like, it was kind of cool doing that. But I didn't even know that someone had to test my recipes after I did it. So
you're like, I did it. Why do I need someone to test it?
Yeah. But it was kind of necessary, and I think it was good.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
why not?
The recipes I'm going to try out of that book are, and by the way, like Bobby Murphy's doing your stuff now, but then on the cocktails in the book, you worked with Reynolds, who was that Booker and Dax back in the day.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like a lot of connections.
Cool guy,
here. Yeah, he's a cool guy. Yeah,
yeah.
That's down in my neighborhood. Before I get into the thing, I was actually going to say. So we always have this problem. Whenever I have a bar, we go through a lot of bananas, and we can't buy bananas that are ripe. Right. So we buy them when they're green and then we stick them in our boiler room, which we're not supposed to do until the flies come. and then we process them. Right. Because otherwise you're being dumb. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like for what we're doing, we need the flavor of a ripe banana. So in the book, you say that you went into a shop, right? And I just can't even believe this. And you're like, first of all, like kudos to walk up to a manager and be like, what the hell? Don't you have a banana that's worth anything here? I don't want to wait a week. I'm cooking today. I'm not cooking in a week. You know what I mean? It's like, now you can buy avocados almost all the time that are ready, all different levels of avocado. But bananas, you cannot buy a ripe banana anywhere in this city ever. Mm. So you walk in, you're like, what the hell? And he takes you in back they take you in back, and it's like stacks of ripe bananas, and you're like, what the hell? And you said they're not throwing them away, they're sending them to a food bank or whatever, but like, I wish they would just have like a little container up front of like ready-to-go bananas. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's a crazy story. Do you think that a lot of supermarkets are like that? I can go
yeah,
be like, give me the good ones. Give me the ones that work.
I think there's a lot of supermarkets doing that, for sure. They always keep the good stuff anyway.
Because like, you know, and also like whenever you do a demo, like I don't do that demo away because I know that the bananas are going to be garbage. I know I'm going to show up and the banana is going to be flavorless, starchy, you know. Oh, nightmare. All right, so you have a lot of recipes for wheat bran. I have so much wheat bran in my house. So my question is on the wheat bran ice cream. So with most of these things, you're toasting the wheat bran and then using them as a steep. So you, I don't know if you did this with Reynolds or not, but like you do a wheat bran whiskey, which I'm going to try. I tried making a wheat bran syrup.
I think he came up with that recipe. I don't remember the recipe.
Yeah, yeah. I did a wheat bran syrup. And I didn't get enough wheat bran in, but I think if I had done it in the liquor, so you're getting a 2 ounce pour instead of like mm-hmm. a half ounce or a 3/8, because I was doing a wheat bran syrup. So then obviously the wheat bran tea is only like 0.615% of the syrup. And then you're only using like 3/8 of an ounce of that mm-hmm. into a 2 ounce pour for an old fashioned. So it's not enough bran. Mm. But putting it in the whiskey is maybe smarter. Maybe I'll try it. I have so much bran in my house.
Yeah.
I'm constantly sifting flour, and I have, like, you know.
Use it for a nuka pot.
I did it and it with wheat, because I only have wheat bran and some rye. Mm-hmm. But, like, it is great for, like, 5-6 weeks, like, maybe. And then it goes bad on me. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's I think that's the living, you know, you can keep on feeding it and change it and just make sure you have. Basically, you have to feed it with bacteria on your hands. That's really the recipe. But in here, we cannot do that. We have to use gloves and all this. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But at home, you can feed it with your. Just make sure you have clean hands, of course. But use your hands.
And I think my temperature in my kitchen maybe is too high.
That could be. That could be one of the reasons.
You know, like I gotta, see what the optimum temperature is and do it because I want to do that again because I have, literally, like. I hate to say it. For a while, I would save it. I would have gallon bags of bran. You
should,
know what I mean?
Yeah, do the nuka pot. That would be great. Yeah, and you can keep all your root vegetables in it.
Yeah. You know what tastes bad is trying to just make a cereal out of just a bran. You know, like
don't do that.
Yeah, online, they're like, oh, you could just put some honey into it and No, it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's the driest thing you're
ever
going
to do. Yeah, you don't
want
to do that. No.
Yeah, how's the wheat bran ice cream? That's the one I want to try. Quinn,
It's great. Yeah? You toast it. Yeah, it's good. It's toasty, good. Yeah, if you haven't tasted wheat bran before, it's difficult to explain, but you have. So.
Yeah.
It's kind of a toasty, good taste, yeah.
Yeah, and for those of you that don't know, the bran and the germ are different, although when I have bran, it has germ in it because I'm not separating. So when you commercially mill a flour on rollers, they pop the germ off separately and the bran comes off in flakes and they go into two streams. But if you mill your own stuff, the germ and the bran and a little bit of the endosperm are part of the bran mm-hmm. fraction. So it's the commercial stuff is a little bit different from the stuff you make yourself. What do you got, Quinn? What are you saying?
I was going to say, so is the recipe just like a steep of the bran in the milk or the dairy, rather?
I believe, yes. I believe it's in the cream. Mm-hmm. I wrote it down here, but I can't read it because the type is too small and my glasses aren't on. But yeah.
Yeah, you basically just steep it into any dairy you can imagine. Or it could also be into water and you can make a sorbet out of it, but it's just to get the flavor out of it.
Yeah, I would say you need to press the ever-loving hell out of it, though, mm-hmm. right? Because it absorbs a lot.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, so you have to press the ever-loving snot out of it.
Yeah, with the homemade bran, would you have to, like, bring it up to a certain temperature to gelatinize, like, the trace endosperm, or would you want to avoid that?
Why would you want to gelatinize the starch into it? Wouldn't you want to avoid that?
I mean, just...
We warm up the milk all... to get it out, and then we press it after.
You know what's a godsend? Nut milk bags.
Yeah, like, yeah, great.
They're so good, and they're so cheap now. They're so good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you can just be so rough with them. You know what I'm saying?
It's great.
You know? My only issue is that I wear, you know, the old school.
We call it super bags.
Yeah, well, but do you spend them? Well, you probably spend
them. We have a lot of them, yeah.
But you buy the real ones? I buy the cheap ones because I'm cheap.
No, we buy the real ones.
Yeah, you're more like Boardwalk. I'm more like, I'm not Baltic Avenue. I'm like Connecticut Avenue, but I'm trying to be like St. James
longer,
Place.
You know, you know what I mean? Just, it lasts longer.
Yeah.
I don't care about the brand, but it's more just when you, some, I think when you buy quality, it's like it will stay for a longer time.
The, to me, the downfall of the cheap ones that I get, that I buy, is the sewing lines on the edge. Yeah. There's little holes, and sometimes they...
goes out.
Yeah, that's the main, to me. They don't they don't tape seal
but
the edges.
But you can do, if you just leave it in the bag and just strip, if you have plenty of time,
Chef, come on.
You could use that. If you have to go fast, you have to probably get some...
Do I seem like someone with that kind of patience to you? Another recipe I want to try, by the way, so like when this book came out, when 2017, so
a while ago, yeah.
Yeah. So in that, actually a little bit before that, maybe 2015 was like the era of, I know you like beets. Nastassi and I are a little bit triggered by beets because we used to go to a restaurant that served us giant chunks of undercooked beets. Remember that, Stas?
Yeah. Horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so like, you know, I like beets, but like sometimes I have issues with them. But do you remember, I don't want to say it's like 2014, 15, like the par dehydrated beet. Mm-hmm. Which are delicious. I first had it at like the 10th anniversary WD50. I don't know who came up with the idea originally. I really don't. It wasn't me or anyone that I know. But like, they're delicious, the par dehydrated beets. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of these par dehydrated things, like ones that I hadn't known, like carrot raisins. So you say to reconstitute them, but when you dehydrate a carrot, are you taking it down so I can still eat it like mm-hmm. a la minute? Or?
If it's getting too hot, if you dehydrate it too much, you could just always put it into some kind of liquid. Kinds of becoming moist again, or chewy. We want the chewy flavor, like that feeling of a wine gum.
Yeah. Oh, wine gums are delicious. Yeah, man. Good call out of Maynard's wine gums.
So
yeah.
You kind of want that feeling. I think we also had carrots, chewy carrots, before we take them and dehydrate them. But the beets are absolutely amazing when you dehydrate them into this kind of a raisin.
Yeah, they're a better product.
Yeah.
I think. And then, but the carrots, you're doing a quick parboil in a sugar water, right? Mm-hmm. Until it's like just, and then you pull it and you have them in like you call them logs, and they're, I don't know what that
is. You cut them on in small, small dices.
And then you take them down, and then they're semi-stable.
Yeah. No. And yeah, you dehydrate them into a raisin into the going to a half size.
Yeah. I like that idea. All right, let's see. I'm sure let's get to some listener questions, which you might have some. What?
I had a question.
What's up?
Yeah, it's for Med. You know, there's a lot of, I feel like, trend of fine dining restaurants that also incorporate, you know, live fire cooking. When you're imagining a dish or a menu, are you trying to, like, balance old techniques with more modern techniques? Or in your mind, is it more just, like, all one toolbox?
So, illis means fire and ice in Danish. So it's a combination of these two words, ill and ease. So that's the whole name of the restaurant. So basically, when we don't think about dishes, we think about ingredients, and it's also how you are choosing your menu at illis. So every ingredient we have on the menu, I always think about a fire dish and a raw dish. So asparagus right now, for example, green asparagus, we have a raw asparagus dish with fresh cheese, and then we have a grilled asparagus dish on. So it's always, I always think it can go both ways.
What do you think of that purple asparagus? Worth anything or just a gimmick?
Yeah. I like purple asparagus, but it doesn't taste better than the green one.
I don't think it does either.
I think, but you also eat with your eyes. But if you're colorblind anyway, so it doesn't matter what color it is. So I think a purple asparagus, it tastes great, but a green asparagus tastes as good.
I mean, they try to pretend that it's sweeter, but I don't think it is.
I don't feel it is, no. I don't taste the difference, really. The only difference is white and green. I feel like that's the difference, really a big difference.
Oh, another thing I think is funny in the book is you say, like you include like which things to take home from restaurants and which not to take home from restaurants and like to repurpose, which I thought was funny. And you list out like a pretty basic pantry of stuff you have for go-to. I think every cookbook, of course, I'm not going to do it, but I think everyone should just list like here's the stuff that I always have on hand so that I can bam cook. You know what I mean? And it's not super crazy extensive. You know what I mean? Something reasonable. Here's a question. From Math Man, longtime listener, writes in that, Chef, maybe you have some opinions on. I'd love some advice on what to do with 30 pounds of white fish, unstated white fish. White fish. So I'm assuming, like, when someone just says white fish, what do they mean?
They could be so many different things.
They mean flatfish, or they mean like a chub, like a mackerel?
No, that's not. I think it's more flatfish, like flatfish? More like fluke, that
fluke,
type.
Fluke,
yeah.
Halibut?
It could also be sea bass, for example.
Yeah. Fluke. Anyway, I started out with about 50 pounds from a fishing trip. Yeah, fishing trip. So it's flat. Definitely probably a flat fish.
Yeah.
I started out with about 50 pounds from a fishing trip, and I'm sick of breaded, baked, fried, broiled, and steamed. What are some ways I can use this fish in more flavorful ways?
So you have a lot of fish to start with. Either you cannot use it all at the same time, of course, or you have to have a big dinner party. But I will split it out in different ways, of course. You can salt it, cure it, so you have that, and you can smoke it. Of course, freeze it, and you can take it out of the freezer when you need it later on. But for me, I will probably cure it and smoke.
I have never cured my own fish. How stinky is it?
Oh, so we have a very...
I mean, I've cured, like, lox, but I've never done, like...
No, but I can... We're aging fish in the restaurant, so... We have a tuna on the menu right now. Basically, we just took it off. It cups on again. But when we open up the restaurant, for friends and family, for example, we got so much tuna in to the restaurant, we couldn't use it. So we cured it with seaweed and salt. And we started using it here the past month. So we actually had a fish that was like 5 to 6 months old. It was almost like, the tuna was almost like ham.
Huh.
So we had that on for a while.
So does it mean that you can only, that it's like, it's delicious, but you can only tolerate like a little bit of it? Like it's like
salt.
Intense?
It's almost like a ham, like a cured Iberico ham, Blackfoot ham. So it's like, you don't want to eat tons of it, but you can, every bite you want actually a little bit more because like umami is so amazing.
Yeah, do you, there are tuna things like that where I'm like, I like it a lot, but like, I can't imagine having infinity of it, like tuna heart.
Yeah, for sure. But right now, you know, I think this became a signature thing for us. Right now, we just got, was it, 5 tuna into the restaurant?
That's a lot.
Yeah, 5 big tunas, but we're using a whole loin for a week, so we have to be ahead of our game.
How many covers a night?
Right now, we're doing around Tuesday and Wednesday, we're doing around 60 to 70. And then Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we do around 80 to 100 people.
Yes, yeah, so it's a lot of tuna. That's a lot of tuna.
It's a lot of tuna, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious because, like, you know, look, there's obviously so much experimentation going on from a, you know, different ingredients coming in, using ingredients, like, you know, the cooks running the service, like all of these, you know, all this live fire stuff. Like it's a lot of like pushing envelope going on. What is it? And whenever you do that, some things you're going to do, you're going to be like, oh no, that was a mistake. And then change it as you go. Like what have you found has been the biggest changes you've had to make?
I think we've been sticking to the idea of creating this one house feeling. What we have changed, yeah, so it's not a set menu. Everyone had like an idea, I will open up this fine dining restaurant that was like one set menu only. And it's just not the way I like to eat anymore. So I really just want to do a la carte where it becomes more like, you choose your own set menu, so you have the choices into creating your own set menu. So we basically have a big cart, like a big tray of food that comes in front of you, and that's 12 ingredients. And you can every ingredient can go 2 to 3 different ways, and you choose your own adventure from there.
Did you have those books growing up?
Yeah. But in the beginning also, the snacks was not a part of that, so you chose your thing, your adventure, and after that, a snack card came up. And because sometimes I just don't want snacks. I didn't want this little clam, you know, the flask.
It's not little, but yes.
Yeah, it's big, but but I didn't want, you know, sometimes I just don't want these things. So I wanted to give everyone a choice for that. But it was kind of, we cannot just give that away. So it have to be, you have to pay extra for that. So we took that away. It was one of the things I really liked was that whole like hard snack appetizers thing. We were running around in the dining room, but we could just not do it because it was too much work. There was like 3 people every day that had to set up this cart and running around and charge extra. It was like, it felt wrong. So we took that away, and now it's just a part of the menu. So everyone that comes in there will get that experience and just get all the snacks.
And so the problem with charging extra was it felt like too much commerce happening during the service part?
Yeah, and it was too much. It took just too long. And also, of course, labor was like a big issue. And a lot of these things, all these snacks, in the end of service, we had so much things that was, if you didn't sell it, we had to throw it out because it was pre-made. So we lost a lot of ingredients, so we just had to change
it. End of shift, people are like...
Yeah. Definitely everyone. So it's also a rule that is everyone knows what they're serving because they have tasted it. So yeah, definitely everyone knew about the snacks.
Yeah. So, and is it still like, so when friends and family, like, so we're choosing your own adventure, you go in, there's ingredients, but like it was when I went like 2 sides of the menu, like the hot side and the cold side, and you had to go.
That's changed also.
Oh, yeah.
So now we have 2 menus. We have one, like, let's cook for you. It's the field guide. So it's between 10 and 14 dishes, depends of what is on the market. And that's basically if you don't want to choose and just let us choose. And then we have the market menu, and that's 4 selections from you. You have to choose your own 4 ingredients, and then you can add on to it, and each ingredient costs $25 extra. And that includes 4 choices from you, and then 3 appetizers, 3 snacks, and then 2 desserts. So basically it's a 7-course menu somehow. But you choose if you want to just go fish or vegetables or meat.
And what percentage of people do the...
50-50.
Yeah?
50-50.
Yeah. Hey, John, get this. You ready for this?
Ready.
So they signed the lease in, I guess, 2020, and immediately start putting down preserves and veg. So you have like 2-3 years of like starting stock. So, yeah. Right.
Wow.
So, yeah.
But the plan is, we didn't plan it had to take 3 years to open up the restaurant. It was like, I had this dream for so long. But then we signed the lease and thought, okay, it will take a year or something, you know?
No, yeah.
But then COVID hit and all this happened and everything just became more expensive.
2 more minutes, we could go, yeah.
So after that, it just took 2 more years than they planned. And so we just start preserving and start build up a lab.
So like, had you already... How much of your staff could you... Like, it's so hard to lock in staff when you're doing like a 3-year problem.
You know what I mean?
It's like almost impossible.
We had all the managers. But also we were very clever in a way of saying, okay, we cannot fully hire you before we know, okay, this will happen in half a year.
Because talk about lighting money on fire. Hiring your staff too early. You know what I mean? It's like...
But we did like 2 months of friends and family and then private events and all this. We did that. So it was not just because all the waiters was... thrown in front, all the cooks was thrown in front of the dining room, and then, you know, they had some training.
Oh, I'm sure. No, it's quite an experience. Like I say, it's like I hadn't expected someone could open as high concept a place as this these days, just because there's so many barriers. Like you didn't really the permitting for the open fire must have just been a complete nightmare.
It was very, very difficult. The whole open kitchen have been, you know, an issue because I just wanted to make people feel they're part of the dining experience.
So as someone who is like, you know, adopting us as a home, a New Yorker, when you come in there and you're trying to do this and then like a New York City inspector comes in and just has
difficult.
The New York City...
Yeah. Very difficult, yeah. It's very difficult, yeah.
Because you're like, he's like, I don't care, man. I don't care. Where's the Ansel? You're like, what? You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? It's like...
It's difficult. Yeah, it's very difficult to have this kind of restaurant in New York.
I imagine it's impossible. So you should stop by Illis. You should get the book, which is Scraps, Wilt, and Weeds from Kitchen Arts and Letters with a Patreon discount. Also going back, we still have the discount code for GlassFan.
GlassFan, yep.
You guys have your own glasses that you're made by a local artisan here in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
Very fancy. 10% off, and then Patreon gets more if you go on. Chef Mads Wrestling, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you
come
for
back anytime.
Me.
Yeah, cooking issues.
Thank you.